Yeah, behavior problems are growing. Behavior is becoming more challenging, but so is our understanding of those behavior challenges and the tools and the resources that we have to address those challenges.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Recently, it has been reported that more than 80% of U.S. public schools are saying that the pandemic has negatively impacted student behavior and socio-emotional development. Luckily, our guest today is the perfect person to give us some insight in how system and school culture can help teachers with these issues. Trudy Bender previously served as the coordinator of district behavior intervention for the Waco Independent School District, where she facilitated the implementation of a multi-tier system of supports for behavior, including initiatives to improve school climate and connection, provide effective Tier 2 and Tier 3 behavior intervention programs, and coordinate wraparound services and transitional support for students in alternative disciplinary settings. Not only all of that, but she built a multi-year sequence of teacher training in classroom management, behavior intervention, and peer coaching to help build capacity and collaboration among teachers. Now, she serves as Branching Minds MTSS content manager, but she still manages to serve the state of Texas as a restorative discipline facilitator and is a licensed specialist in school psychology and nationally certified school psychologist. She's here today to provide us great insight into student behavior intervention. Here's my conversation with Trudy. Well, today on our podcast, I am excited to welcome Trudy Bender, who is the current content manager for Branching Minds, but she has a vast array of experience, and I'll let her kind of introduce herself, but we're so excited to have you on the podcast. And so, Trudy, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell everybody sort of your why. You're so amazing.
Well, I've been looking forward to this. It's so great to be on the School and Around podcast. It's been so fun to see that come to life. And it does have the very best intro music of like any podcast. So gets in my head and it's there all the time. So thank you. So I would say a teacher at heart. I always wanted to be a teacher. I studied piano and music education in college. I wanted to be an elementary music teacher. And I did do that, but I did a lot of other things as well. My career for the past 30 years has taken some different turns along the way. So I did teach elementary music. I also did a lot of volunteer work, directed church programs for kids like after school and summer and camp. I always had a studio of piano students in addition to everything else I was doing, anywhere from 10 to 25 kids that I enjoyed working with. And we moved all over the country. And so I had a lot of different kinds of experiences. But in my very last teaching job, what really struck me in the interview is that before they asked me anything about my teaching experience or my musical knowledge or my ability to plan lessons or direct musicals or anything like that, what they said was, can you manage behavior? Because if you can't manage behavior, we just need to stop this right now, because they had been struggling so much to find teachers who could teach the content, but also manage the behavior. And that was their number one concern. That was at the top of their list. And I had just kind of noticed this thread through my whole career that I was really passionate and interested in helping the kids who struggled with behavior, helping their parents, helping their teachers, connecting with those kids, giving them a place where they could find success. And of course, music is a great vehicle to do that, right? So a lot of kids who struggle with behavior in other areas, or maybe they have learning disabilities, you know, they're not very successful academically, but in music or at the piano, they could find something that they enjoyed and that they felt connected to. Mm-hmm. There's always a community that kind of comes with that. And so by the end of my career teaching piano, almost all of my students, they were almost all boys, and they almost all had some kind of ADHD, or they had, you know, some kind of behavior issues, or they had learning disabilities or things like that. And I just really connected with them and enjoyed working with them. And I'm so proud that many of my former students are now music teachers themselves. And
so that's so cool.
It's such a fun thing to see that go forward. So so that idea of helping kids with behavior problems led me to make a hard shift about 12 years ago. I decided to become a school psychologist. So I went back to school. I had never gotten my master's degree, and I studied school psychology, and I was really interested in that behavioral side of things. And then while I was in my internship year, I was hired in Waco Independent School District here in Waco, Texas. And I served there for many years then as their coordinator of district behavior intervention. And that's really where I was introduced to this idea of multi-tiered systems of support, the way that we can be systematic about helping kids and helping teachers address these behavioral needs, being proactive about behavior instruction, creating community in schools, and really helping kids be successful both in school, but also in life, because those behavioral skills are critical, not just for academic success, but for life success. That's kind of my story. I don't know if that was a nutshell. It was kind of long, but yeah.
I think it's very interesting that you remember that interview and that question and how that kind of like prompt your thinking, because I think as a music teacher, and I don't know about you and if you've ever like sat in those meetings, but as sort of an elective teacher, oftentimes you, like you said, you had a very different experience with students in a music class versus other classes. And I also think classroom management in an elective class looks very different than a core subject area. And so I guess my question is, when you were working with other teachers, did you kind of draw on that experience of, was it harder to make that connection with sometimes those core subject area teachers because it was a different content area, or were you able to kind of like bridge the gap?
Yeah, you know, sometimes as a specials teacher, you feel a little bit like the forgotten stepchild off to the side, right? That doesn't feel included as a part of things. But I was very fortunate to work in schools that recognize the importance of the arts and of giving students those extracurricular and additional opportunities to really shine. And so I typically was able to really connect well with teachers. Plus, you know, in the schools that I served, the teachers were so delighted. I was really fortunate to work in a couple of great schools where teachers were really invested in seeing their children, not their students, not just in school, but outside of school. And so teachers were very willing to get involved in things like all school musicals, you know, where it's like all hands on deck and everybody's involved in that, and just being delighted in seeing their students perform and shine. But I really resonate with what you said about bringing that different perspective. You know, isn't it true that often we're sitting in a meeting talking about a student, and one teacher is like, that's not my experience at all. I find this student to be completely delightful. I have not seen any of these issues at all, you know, and that is such an important clue to say what's going on in that classroom compared to the rest of these classrooms. You know, so often we want to chase down where the problems are rather than chasing down where is this student succeeding and how can we multiply and build on that in other contexts. And in behavior, that's really important. Like if there is a place where that student is finding success, if you can figure that out, figure out who they're connected to and what kind of structure provides success for them, then you can often bring some of those elements into other places in the school where they're not being as successful. And so, I've just really appreciated being able to sometimes be that person or that place where a student's finding success, able to speak up and say, you know, I have a different experience of this student. I see this student as having so many skills and strengths that we can build on.
Yeah. I think that, oh man, I think that's so important, kind of what you talked about, like that the clue, your experience with a clue about an insight into that student. And I think that that's very important when you're talking about the collaboration part of a multi-tiered system of support working in a team of teachers, is having that different insight and provided of like, if they're doing really well in music class, what's different about the music class? What is it? Cause they're really interested. So then can we draw that into other areas to like help motivate, you know, and, instead of it being like, well, they're doing poorly in other classes. They're doing really well in music, but we'll take him out of that class because he needs help in here. Like, you know, I hate those conversations. Like, don't take away the thing that motivates them to come to school.
That's exactly right. Yes, that is exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, the last thing you want to do is strip away from a student the thing that is really enjoyable and motivating to them. You do not want school to be a place of unrelenting hardship and work for a student. You want them to have places where they're really finding joy. Some students just enjoy the whole process, but some students really don't. And we have to find ways of connecting them with the school community and attaching them to something or someone that makes them feel capable and makes them feel like they belong. And, you know, a lot of our students, they have skills and they have leadership skills. They're just not applying them correctly. And so one of my very favorite behavior interventions that we implemented in my school district was this idea of meaningful work, where you connect a student with someone that they like being with, and you allow them to contribute in a meaningful way to the school community in a way they might not otherwise have thought of. So for example, a kid who really has great, you know, they're just love to be the center of attention, letting them be an office greeter or a front door greeter, giving them some kind of status in the school, some kind of special job that they can do, often is just such an important little thing for that student, you know, and they feel like I got to show up for school because I'm the guy in the office, or letting them, you know, work with little kids, you know, go back and work with their kindergarten teacher that they loved for just 20 minutes a day. That kind of thing can really help those students feel like they do have skills and they can be successful, and it gives them a reason to show up at school. Kids who have additional adults that they're connected to at school and who feel like they belong are way more likely to graduate from high school and to have positive life outcomes. Like, we know that from research. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Larissa, the arts can be a really important part of that. I really believe in making sure that students have those opportunities.
I think your insight into this, you know, and how to apply some of these concepts of MTSS and your experience in that is so valuable. I was curious, because now you have that perspective as a school psychologist and that training. And I know that you continue to do your active, you continue to stay up on all the research and continuing education. And so I kind of am very curious about your insight about like a misunderstanding from your, like, as a school psychologist and behavior specialist, like, what is maybe a misunderstanding about that role from the perspective of maybe administrators and teachers? Like, when you step into a conversation, like, you know, a meeting about a student, maybe what are some misconceptions you've encountered from teachers and administrators?
I love this question. I think the number one misconception for me is that school psychologists or behavior specialists have some kind of secret knowledge that nobody else knows about that's going to magically just fix behavior problems. Like, just by saying you're going to show up, everything is just going to be better, you know? And I remember in my school psych program, I kept waiting for this secret to behavior. And as it turns out, there is no secret. Like, there's no magic behind this. It's just, there's a couple of things. You have to have a posture of curiosity, of tenacity, like just being willing, we're going to try this. You know, I think this might be at the root of the problem. And then that might work, or it might work for a while. And then we have to go back and try something new. Like what was working isn't working anymore because kids are growing and they're changing mm-hmm. and they're changing and the context is changing. So really being open to trying different things, to staying curious, of course, staying very patient. And there is an idea that when you work with children a lot who have big behavior problems, you do learn some skills that you can employ. And sometimes just the presence of another adult in the room, you know, another authority figure in the room, it's common for teachers to be like, they always do it except when you show up. When you show up, they just sit there and they never show you what's going on, you know. But that idea that you can, but the idea yeah. that you can really be a calm place for kids. You know, I think the idea that behavior specialists can just show up and fix everything, of course, is ridiculous. But what we can do is provide an additional set of eyes and look at the great big picture that a teacher might not be able to. We can see the student in different contexts. We can watch what's happening in the larger classroom. You know, sometimes it's not anything that the teacher's doing. It's feedback that they're getting from their peers that's causing them to continue that kind of behavior. And, you know, and then just digging down and figuring out what's behind this behavior, because we often want to respond to the behavior itself. But of course, the behavior itself is just a symptom. And behavior, you can have the same behavior, but so many different things underlying that behavior. And it's what's underlying the behavior that you have to address. If you just address the symptom, you're not going to get very far. A student could be running down the hallway because they love to be chased and they love the attention. They could be running down the hallway because they're having panic attacks. You want to respond to those two things in a very different way. So really, really digging down and trying to understand what's going on behind that behavior. And teachers don't always have the full time to do that and the training to do that. And so
I think as a teacher, I didn't always have the bandwidth to really examine, right? Because like in the teacher, you're responding to things in the moment. Like you just have to get through the lesson, get through the day. Like you don't have that mental bandwidth in the moment to really fully examine what's happening, you know? And so I think that that's where having another person, another trained eye to come in and watch and observe and just like pick up little things that, because I, as the role of a teacher, I'm responding to 25 different needs at the moment. And I can't fully give my full attention to that one individual, you know, for longer than 2 seconds or whatever. And so I think that that's so, you're like laughing because you know. It's true.
I was just going to say, I think that the idea that I was a teacher, you know, that I have a lot of compassion for what teachers are actually facing in the classroom and how complicated it is to actually change things and address behavior because you have so many things going on. One of the things that I say to my fellow school psychologists, many of whom have not ever been classroom teachers, and sometimes they can be critical of teachers, you know, and just expecting teachers to do all kinds of things that really are not practical. They're not even feasible for a teacher to do. And so I really have a lot of, I mean, one of the reasons I went into school psychology, yes, I really do want to help reach students. But if the student has a behavior problem, the teacher needs support, right? It's really you're most of the time you're working through the adults in the class, in that classroom to support that student. And teachers want to do well for their students. And they're often just doing just an amazing job. And even a teacher who has amazing classroom management and they're doing all of the things and they're willing to do the interventions, that doesn't mean that students don't still come to school with great big behavioral needs that teacher doesn't need additional support. And it's a real honor to be able to come into that place and support a teacher in that way. So, and you need a lot of Kleenex boxes too. Always bring the Kleenex. So teaching's hard. It's really hard.
Teachers do need the support because they're doing so much and they're doing such great work. And in order to continue in that work, you know, they need that support. So kind of speaking about support, in your district role, cause you transitioned into a district behavior specialist.
Yeah.
So when you adopted the MTSS framework, that was part of your work in Waco, what was challenging and easy about that? Because I know that some of our listeners are in that process of adopting and implementing an MTSS framework into their schools. for you and your perspective, what was challenging and easy about that process?
Well, let's do the challenging part first. So MTSS it's just big. There are so many moving pieces and it really impacts almost every aspect of school life. So when I started in my role as a district administrator, I was hired specifically because our district had extremely high discipline rates, out of school suspension, in school suspension, disciplinary placements, and we had significant disproportionality within that. And so it was my job to kind of address that. And that's, you know, that's a big task. And so I started looking at all the research, like, well, what will actually make a difference? Like, what would actually move the needle on significant disproportionality or lowering, you know, discipline rates and things like that. And at that time, it was called response to intervention, right? RTI, but like RTI and PBIS or positive behavior interventions and supports, those things just kept rising to the very top of the list. Like, if you want to address this issue, you need to get systematic about it. And the whole idea, I had learned about RTI in my school psychology program, of course, and even going back further than that, it had always been something that was very appealing to me, that idea of how we can organize ourselves to better support students. And so I really latched onto that concept and tried to start building that out across a district, and had a lot of successes and a lot of failures along the way. And part of it is, like, you have to start somewhere and you can't fix everything at once. There are so many things. And so you have to figure out how to prioritize and what are we going to do first, you know? And then the other thing that really came up as helpful in addressing that kind of thing was restorative practices. And so right from the beginning, we were also attempting to incorporate restorative practices in a lot of what we did, and had a lot of success with that as well. So kind of that, those two things. And then eventually we also had a district-wide classroom management model that we implemented. We use Safe and Civil Schools. And so kind of bringing those resources together. So the thing about MTSS is, it's an infrastructure, right? It's the means by which you're going to do all of these other things. But what we found is, like, all right, we need to be much more systematic about our tier one basic classroom support. You know, what are we doing to teach behavior skills universally? We know we need a pretty high level of universal support in our district. We know that our teachers need a high level of classroom management. Well, how are we going to get that done? And what resources are we going to use? Mm-hmm. And we have 25 schools, like, how are we going to train? Like, and how are we going to coach? How are we going to support? You know, so all of those big questions, it was very challenging. And, you know, so when we started, we didn't have a universal screener. You know, we were using discipline referrals data, and we were using, attendance data and academic data, and trying to, you know, kind of piece these things together. And we had big tier three needs. And so we, you know, had to address these. We couldn't just wait, you know, for several years until everything else was great and then address these kids who were, you know, having big and dangerous behavior. We had to address those things. And so just trying to, you know, it's that idea of building the plane while you're flying it, you know, that we're trying to prioritize and move through. But I'll tell you what was easy about it is that whole framework, that MTSS framework, just makes so much sense. Like, it gives you a way forward, and really a step-by-step way forward. If you really look at those practices, the idea of being mindful about how you're identifying students who need, how are you providing universal support? How are you identifying students who need more? What support are you going to provide? Is the support happening? Is it working? And if not, how are we going to adjust and change that support? Like, that idea, and then using data to inform every part of that process. So you have, like, this continuous improvement process. That way of thinking is so appealing to me. Like, I just mm-hmm. really, you know, kind of scratches where I itch. Like, I really like that idea. And it works at so many levels, right? Like, it works at the individual student level, but then you can widen that mm-hmm. lens. And it also works, you know, at the campus level or at the teacher level. Like, I think, all right, what training do we need to provide for all of our teachers? Like, everybody needs this. And then some teachers need differentiated, you know, they need something different. They need this basics, but we need to differentiate for them. Some teachers have more experience, some teachers have less. And then some teachers are going to need more support. Like, maybe they're great in their content area, but they really struggle with classroom management. What are we going to do to support those teachers who need more help? Mm-hmm. And then you could apply it, you know, you could even pull back even more and be like, all right, these campuses are rocking it. They're doing really well. These campuses are really struggling. How are we going to continue to provide, you know, adequate support for all of these different things? And so it just really helped me frame out the way that we could support things all the way from the individual student to the district-wide level. And having a district-wide team, that was a really critical. When we finally had all of the right people around the table to help make those decisions, because really it impacts your professional development. It impacts your budget, right? Like not just in terms of the mm-hmm. the resources and the tools you need to do it, but the staff that you need to provide interventions on the academic and the behavioral mm-hmm. side. Like all of those things come into play. It impacts your technology department. Certainly, it impacts your curriculum mm-hmm. and your student services. Like all of those different departments are impacted by this framework. So
speaking about MTSS and yes. its impact, can you think of a story or maybe situation where you see that impact played out? Because I love to see, like, you know, and for our listeners to really understand the impact of MTSS, sometimes we attach it to a story, a particular student or school or situation.
Yeah. Well, I got to see that played out big picture over the course of several years. And so I have lots of stories, kind of big and small. And, you know, one thing I would say is that, yeah, behavior problems are growing. Behavior is becoming more challenging. But so is our understanding of those behavior challenges and the tools and the resources that we have to address those challenges. And MTSS is like the engine that's driving that, that's driving that response to behavior challenges. And so being able to implement those components of MTSS, I just saw so many stories coming across, but I'll share a couple of them. And, you know, you can't really share a lot about student details, like specific student details, but I'll say that when we were able to implement tier 2 behavior support district-wide, not just here a little bit and there a little bit, but to really get systematic about it. And when we had a platform where we could really identify, these are the students who need tier 2 support. And we implemented a check-in, check-out program across the entire district. Now, that doesn't mean that every campus had it up and running and it was just beautifully run and everything like that. I mean, it was fits and starts, and this campus would get it going and that can't, you know, there were a lot of issues to it. But at the end of that year where we did that, we could see that there were hundreds of students who were now attached to a mentor. They were having daily positive contact at school. They were getting a far higher level of feedback on their behavior, both positive and negative feedback. And not that it's negative feedback, but corrective feedback, honest feedback. Kids mm-hmm. need that. They need it immediately. But they also, what happens with behavior kids is what kind of attention do they get when they're being good? Typically, not very much, right? The teacher mm-hmm. is just like, well, they're doing what they're supposed to do. I'm going to go about my business. But when you have that tier 2 intentional support, suddenly the level of attention that a child gets for doing the right thing is dramatically increased. And so at the end of that year, we could just see the impact of this. Like, the need for tier 3 support had gone down. Teachers did not feel like they were alone in supporting their students. And I think that's a really huge one, right? One of the things that MTSS does is it says, we're going to organize this so that you're not alone in trying to meet the needs of all of your students. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the grade level or department level, we're going to problem solve together. And then at the campus level, we're going to problem solve together to support you with those students, because teachers cannot do it alone. And they particularly cannot do it alone with tier 3 needs. And when we're talking about that level of support, we're talking about kids who have big behaviors, dangerous, very challenging, very disruptive behaviors. You can't teach through that. That's not something that you can just manage while you're continuing to teach. You need support. You need help with that. Mm-hmm. So I'll get off my soapbox. You know, I'm sure there's a teacher somewhere who's like, yes, you know, but teachers, they need, and they so appreciate the support. And for me, when I knew that we were being successful is when we saw all of these students improving in their behavior, but also teachers saying, and I feel supported. I feel like I'm getting what I need. If you see both of those things, there's a lot of ways you can reduce suspensions without supporting teachers. You can ignore behavior problems. You can sweep them to the side. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do, but what you want to be doing is not ignoring those problems, but really giving teachers the tools, the resources, and the support they need to address those problems. And so I think that district-wide tier 2 support really, really showed the power of that. And also because our district is highly mobile, like our kids are moving around from campus to campus all the time. And so when we had this platform, we could see, oh, this is a kid who is a tier, you know, they're in a check-in, check-out program. We need to get that going for them right away. Like, we don't have to wait 6 weeks to figure out that it has behavior challenges. Yeah. We can just recognize, oh, you were in check-in, check-out at your last campus. Let's get that going for you at this campus. So you have that continuity. And then the other thing that it did, and I just think this is so important, is that it gave hundreds of staff members the opportunity to mentor a kid and connect with a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, like, teachers get into this because they care about children. And so giving them opportunity, and not just, you know, that the idea behind check in, check out is that you're attached to a student who's not you're in your classroom, right? Like, the classroom teacher is not the mentor. It's somebody who's not dealing with the day to day with that student. It's somebody else. It could be the secretary. It could be, you know, the coach. It could be the custodian. It could be any person in the building who has a couple minutes a day to just check in with the child and offer support. And so it was so meaningful for the adults as well.
That's really powerful. That's really powerful to think about the difference not only it made for those students, but like the adults. Because sometimes, honestly, that's the thing that kept me in education, was I had particular stories and students of like, I want to help these kids. I want to make it better for them. And I say all the time, the thing I miss the most about teaching is the students and how much fun. And when you have that personal connection, it just gives you more. Yeah. It gives you a lot of purpose in your work. And I think that that's really important. And I think for a custodian, for, you know, an office assistant, for whoever, you know, that maybe isn't in a support role. Like, that's the thing. Like, if they know that they're making a difference for that kid and the kid depends on them being there or whatever, I think that's really powerful. Oh, yeah. That kind of gave me a little chills, like my eyes teared up a little bit.
Oh my gosh,
it's so powerful.
It really was. And then, you know, that the restorative practices work that we did had a lot of that impact as well, where you know, we trained a wide variety of people in how to participate in building relationships with students. And we had you know, we had folks who were trained, you know, they were at the paraprofessional level or so forth, but when they had that experience of working with students, they're like, I want to become a behavior specialist. I want to, you know, like, it was really inspiring for a lot of people. You know, it's all about those relationships that we are able to build when we're there with our students, and with our colleagues. And so, getting intentional about that, you know, the opportunities that MTSS gives you to be intentional about building those relationships, it makes a huge difference in your day-to-day life.
This has been delightful. And I know that we could talk for a long time, and we'll have you back on the, and often do. We'll have you back sometime to talk about particular topic areas, because I there's more that I wanted to ask about behavior stuff. But I, you know, an hour long podcast might be a bit much for people. So I've actually decided to change up my last question, because I've been asking people about the favorite school supply. But I think, in general, because our podcast is called Schooling Around, and we love to have fun and enjoy things in life here at Branchy Minds. I would love to know, when you were younger, what was like your favorite part about school?
Oh, that's hard. You know, I moved a lot. School was actually kind of challenging for me, not the academic part so much, but just like, you know, there was always some new crazy thing going on. Well, I would say that my happiest memories at school, and this is, you probably can guess what I'm going to say, is those music classes. I love that. Mm. Like the fourth grade recorder. I mean, I know a lot of kids are not a fan of the fourth grade recorder. I loved the fourth grade recorder. You know, and of course I was, you know, involved in music all the way through. So those kinds of experiences really, you know, I loved it. I loved marching band. I just loved all of that kind of stuff, choir and music.
That's so great. I love that. I love the fourth grade recorder, because I'm sure that there are parents of fourth graders right now that don't love the fourth grade recorder.
I'm sorry. I was that music teacher. Everybody's getting a recorder.
But it's like such an easy intro into like playing an instrument. You know, it's like, it's not that hard, but I love that. That's a great, and you know, it's like when you mention that, I have very vivid memories of the fourth grade recording.
Oh, hot cross buns.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you. I just wanted to mix it up. Sorry, I threw you a curveball, but I appreciate your willingness to answer. So thank you so much for chatting with me today and just your insight into school psychology and behavior. And I'm just excited to see what more ways that we can support educators in what we're doing. So thank you.
Thank you. Love working with you, Larissa. Thanks. This was so much fun.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.